So again, the title of my talk is Policing as a Health Determinant, Immigration Policies and Police Practices Shaping Undocumented Latinos' Health in Atlanta. And it's great to follow Bill, who reminded us that these kinds of immigration raids are a constant reminder of the kind of vulnerability that undocumented immigrants face, particularly the risk of deportability in the context of living their everyday lives. So no relationships to disclose. And before I begin, I just want to take a moment for all of us to reflect on the timeliness of discussing immigrant policing as a public health issue. Recent attention to police relationships with minority populations has shown the kinds of tensions that can result in deadly consequences, and recent news media further points to how immigration reform continues to be a politically pressing topic and is related to immigrants' overall health and well-being. So this presentation is at the intersection of two particularly salient topics meriting attention from public health researchers. Undocumented Latino immigrants in the United States experience numerous health-related vulnerabilities, often lack health insurance, and are not eligible for publicly financed safety net programs. Contrary to characterizations of being drains on public health resources, undocumented Latino immigrants in the U.S. underutilize health services compared to their citizens or documented immigrant counterparts, despite being at greater risk for poor health than the general population. Moreover, undocumented immigrants are prohibited from participating in health insurance exchanges created through the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, even if they purchase health insurance using their own funds through these exchanges. In recent years, undocumented Latino immigrants' health-related vulnerabilities have heightened due to increasingly stringent immigration regimes that exacerbate health outcomes and existing barriers to accessing health services. Public health scholars have called for additional research on how immigration regimes impact immigrants' health, and this call is amplified by additional awareness on how police relationships can impact minority populations, creating feelings of distrust and anxiety that shape other aspects of life. This study responds to calls for more research on immigration enforcement and health, and also responds to recent calls to continue examining the non-medical structural factors impacting health, like policy and police activity. As an ethnographic study, or an in-depth qualitative study in which I spent over a year working closely with an undocumented immigrant rights organization in Atlanta, this study sheds light on the depth of the health-related impacts of immigration enforcement regimes and further provides an analytic for thinking about policing and health, which I'll provide in more detail later on. An estimated 440,000 undocumented immigrants live in Georgia, and the population had been growing until recent years. The Latino population, specifically, both documented and undocumented, had doubled in Georgia from 2000 to 2010, reaching over 850,000 people, and about 65% of this population lives in Atlanta. Although Georgia has a history of immigration tied to the agricultural and chicken industries, a large number of Latino immigrants arrived to Georgia in the mid-1990s as part of a need for construction laborers to prepare for the 1996 Olympic Games. And Georgia officials actually met with the Mexican consul, requesting that the consul do something to bring more Mexican immigrants to Georgia because there were worries about construction projects not being done on time. So around this time, you started seeing billboards popping up all over Mexico saying, Georgia's open for business, move to Georgia, Georgia's hiring. And Georgia officials assured the consul that they would figure out the immigration stuff later, but they never did. The Olympic Games construction projects were completed on time, and the need for construction laborers continued in Atlanta during the 2000s as Atlanta's economy grew along with the housing market. But when the housing bubble burst, a large number of harsh immigration laws started passing the state legislature, which interacted with already harsh federal laws that work on local levels. Locally operating federal laws include the Secure Communities Program and Section 287G of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Secure Communities is a deportation program that was recently replaced by a similar program, the Priority Enforcement Program, and operates through fingerprint matching. So anytime a person is arrested, their fingerprints are taken, and those fingerprints are assessed against a federal database to determine whether or not the arrestee has an identifiable immigration status. If there's no fingerprint match found, then immigration agents are sent to determine the arrestee's immigration status and effectively start the deportation process. Section 287G of the Immigration and Nationality Act deputizes local law enforcement officers to perform functions of federal immigration agents, and combined, these two federal laws increase the risk of deportation for benign actions such as walking down the street or driving to the grocery store, or driving to work, or picking up your kids from school. This is where state laws also come into play. HB 87, the most notorious Georgia immigration law, allows police to stop, detain, and arrest anyone suspected of being undocumented. It has also resulted in accusations of immigrants being racially profiled and being stopped for looking Latino. Adding to this, Georgia prohibits undocumented immigrants from obtaining a driver's license, so when police stop immigrants for ostensibly looking Latino, under the authority of HB 87, they can be arrested for driving without a license, since Georgia does not permit undocumented immigrants to obtain a license. And all of these policies are further compounded by police practices such as setting up checkpoints, and there's a picture of one here. So at a checkpoint, police will stop every car and ask a driver for a driver's license. So if you are indeed driving without a license because you're undocumented and you're returning home from picking your kids up at school, you are arrested, your car is impounded, and you have to figure out who can come pick up your kids. So to examine the impacts of immigrant policing and health, I engaged in 1 year of in-depth collaborative research with an immigrant rights organization and conducted semi-structured interviews with policymakers, state agency workers, community activist groups, providers and hospital staff, and undocumented immigrants. And hopefully, as these concentric circles give away, my overall goal in this work was to examine how immigrant policing pervaded every level of the social-ecological model of health. Findings from this research demonstrate numerous impacts of immigrant policing, but in this presentation, I want to focus in particular on the role of fear in police activities shaping undocumented immigrants' health. Immigrants interviewed for this research described how fear altered where they would seek health services, impacted their preventive health behaviors, and shaped their health-related mobility. And I'll describe all of this in more detail. To illustrate the effects of fear, I've provided a quote here from one young undocumented woman describing her response to seeing police. "The worst part of all these immigration laws is the constant fear. When I get into the car, I start shaking. If I see a police car, I start crying because I know I could get stopped, arrested, and deported and never see my kids again." And this is sort of a representative quote of multiple people who shared common fears of just driving to live their daily lives. This intense feeling of fear resulted in some immigrants changing where they would seek health services in order to avoid police. And some undocumented immigrants sought care from informal providers, so providers who were operating clinics outside, out of their homes, in their patios, in their garages, or their living rooms, or from Latino clinics like the one pictured here, which is now defunct. And these are clinics that, again, operate perhaps with unlicensed physicians and are spaces where people feel more comfortable. As this quote highlights, "We'll go to Clínica de las Américas if we're sick. They might charge you more, and you might not get the best care, but at least it's safe." So the idea here is that these Latino clinics are safer from the threat of deportation than other clinics or main hospitals. In addition to shaping where some immigrants would seek care, immigrant policing also resulted in some immigrants changing their health behaviors, such as engaging in routine exercise. One woman in particular explained to me that she no longer goes for daily exercise walks in her neighborhood because a police officer in a patrol car started following her one day. As she said, "I walk in my neighborhood to get exercise and my doctor recommended it. If the police start following me around all of the time, I won't be able to go out anymore. How will I exercise?" And indeed, she gave up her daily exercise regimen because of the sighting of police. Just as immigrant policing and fear related to immigrant policing shape health behaviors, immigrant policing also alters mobility strategies, such as when some people will leave their homes. Some immigrants I met avoided leaving their homes late at night when they felt that they were most at risk of being discovered by police. And as one participant said, "We won't leave the house at night, even if someone's sick or needs medicine, we just won't risk it. And Atlanta is not like Chicago or New York. You have to have a car to get everywhere." In considering how immigrant policing impacts health, findings from this research reveal how policing shapes healthcare-seeking behavior, preventative behavioral health, and health-related mobility. Considering the numerous health-related vulnerabilities undocumented Latinos already face, policing may exacerbate existing health inequalities. Findings from this research, its potential implications, and the hidden health-related consequences of policing generally highlight the need for researchers to consider policing as a health determinant, encompassing several dimensions, including how policing shapes preferences for care and treatment, likelihood to engage in preventive health behaviors, and mobility. And with this, I suggest an analytic for thinking of policing as a determinant, an understanding policing as a social phenomena comprising policies, individual actions, responses to those actions that interact with social, environmental, and political factors to shape individual behaviors. Overall, there's a growing need to examine public health implications of policing, which impacts individual health and can shape entire communities' relationships with police. Focusing on policing as an area of concern may allow for future community-based interventions on policing to respond to some of the problems that I've discussed here. I'd like to thank the University of South Florida and National Science Foundations for supporting this research. And I'm particularly excited to share some of my references because in some of these articles, the co-authors are actually sitting right here. And if you have any questions, here's my contact information. And I'm happy to take questions now, of course. Great question. So most of the people in this room probably know that, unfortunately, President Obama has been called the deporter-in-chief. So deportation rates under our current presidential administration have gone up over time, and I'm not sure if that number has changed in the most recent years. So I don't know what the most recent figures, but over the past decade, they've certainly increased. Oh, that is a great question. So, you know, the funny thing is undocumented Latinos who would go to these places would say to me, yeah, it's not really the best thing, and you might not actually get the kind of treatment that you want, but we know that we're not going to find police there. And similarly, health providers would actually comment on this and say, you know, we end up getting people who come into our clinic, a prenatal care provider, for example, said we end up getting people who've come into our clinic and they've gone for prenatal care elsewhere, and they've totally screwed up all of their patients, and it would have been better if they had just come to me in the first place. And this actually happens in that same provider's office with women with cervical cancer. And this was particularly outraging for her because she would see female patients who were at a stage in cervical cancer where it was essentially too late for them, and she felt like had they gone to her initially rather than going to these clinics that they felt were safer, then perhaps there could have been something done to treat them earlier on. So long story short, these places are suspect, so much so that there's actually litigation pending in Georgia on a number of these places. But again, they're considered safer because there's no risk of deportation associated with them.